are listening to the Elephant in the Room podcast with your host, Sutta Singh. Each week, we will bring you a diverse range of inspiring speakers on issues of inequality and inequity. You will hear stories about fairness, justice, belonging, and about best practice for creating a more inclusive workplace. So, if you are an individual or leader interested in a fairer, equitable, compassionate society and workplace, this podcast is for you.
From feminism to femininity, from victim to empowerment, from trying to fit in to making her own path, from seeking validation to building others, from being a mentee to becoming a mentor. My guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast this week is Chandana Agarwal, a woman of many parts, a successful advertising professional, a dancer, a writer, a mentor, and an ever-evolving woman. Thank you, Chandana, for being a guest on the Elephant in the Room podcast today.
Thank you so much, Sudha, for having me over. And it's so lovely what you're doing, bringing so many perspectives and point of views from different cultures together. So hats off to you.
Thank you. And let's get started. Tell our listeners about your journey, perhaps something about your childhood, education.
Yeah, so we're two siblings. I'm the younger daughter of the two of us, clearly. And thankfully, I grew up in the south of India. We're North Indians who grew up in Hyderabad. For the listeners who don't know where Hyderabad or how India works, largely there is the Aryan culture in the north and there's the Dravidian culture in the south. Hyderabad happens to be a cosmopolitan city in the south, and that's where I grew up. It was a bit of a mixed bag for me, really, thinking back. My father comes from a very large family and he has many younger brothers. And I think after my mother, all his brothers ended up having daughters. And therefore, my mother kind of bore the cross of starting the trend of having only daughters. And I think somewhere it rubbed off on my psyche. I was made to feel almost grateful for being alive. There was a lot of pressure on my parents to say, I wish you had a son. The younger child should have been a son, etc. Though my parents never consciously or subconsciously even hinted at that. But I think that baggage, that pressure was always there. There was a great hurry to be financially independent. I was always excelling at what I did because I don't think there was luxury to kind of take life as it comes. All my choices and my subjects was based on the career prospects that they would open up rather than what I really wanted to do. And I just think that what I'm saying is not unique to me. It's true for the entire generation of women, all of us that grew up at that time in the country. So yeah, there was a hurry to kind of learn how to cycle, to learn how to kind of get on a scooter. Kind of, you know, you were just in a hurry and waiting to grow up and make yourself useful.
So how did you make your way into advertising?
That's an interesting story in itself. In the year that I was graduating from my MBA institute, there were not too many marketing companies that came to the campus, and I did not make it to the few that came. And I kept crying and crying, weeping, and my father kept trying to reach me, and I refused to come on the phone. Obviously, there were no mobile phones in those days. And finally, he got across to me, and he said, "Babe, what is happening? Why are you crying?" And I was like, "My career is over. I don't crack the job." And my dad told me one thing that's helped me in good stead. He said, "A company only gives you a job. You make your career." And that just propelled me into taking things in my own hands. I left the campus. I took a bus to Bangalore. I went knocking to various advertising agencies. And I thankfully cracked the job with FCB Ulka.
And the rest is history, as they say.
The rest is history, as they say. Or we make the history as we go along.
That's a really interesting story and a great lesson from your dad. So you've worked in the agency side all your life. From what I know of agencies, they're fairly brutal in terms of the long hours, the culture. Did that ever faze you?
No, Sudha. I think you or we or all of us at that time got into a kind of tunnel vision. We wanted to fit in. We wanted to prove that we are more men than men around. We kind of dressed in a certain way. We spoke a certain language. We wanted to prove to the world that we could take it on our chins and still stand tall. all of us, and I shouldn't be talking for everybody, but me personally, I'm very ashamed to admit this, but I used to say, oh my God, there's a woman driver ahead, what is going to happen? So you wanted to dissociate yourself from being a woman, and you tried really hard to be more man than a man. You, I guess at that time, it didn't faze us. We were all hungry. We were all trying to fit in. We all wanted to kind of prove to the world that we could be as good. Looking back, I do believe that a lot of time could have been saved. A lot of work could have been more productive. A lot of heartache could have been saved if we were who we were. But I don't think any of us realized at that time that we were curbing who we intrinsically are.
True, that it was a choice at all to be somebody else.
I remember I started smoking because most of the conversations would happen in the balcony outside, and you wanted to be a part of that conversation. I would see matches because I wanted to be a part of conversations, and sports does not interest me at all because I believe unless you've played a sport, you can't really vibe with it. Following matches into smoking, into living a certain way.
Always
should be born in their 40s and then they should find their way back. I think 40s is so liberating.
I agree with you. I think my 40s were an amazing decade. I really enjoyed myself. I came to my own. I didn't care about what people said and thought and did. I just knew what I wanted and where I wanted to go. But I still wasn't as brave as I am since the last couple of years. I think moving out of the agency life and that linear career path, that has sort of helped me to break free and given me the freedom to be able to speak. So you've always trodden the path less taken, been very brave, taken chances, and lived life on your own terms. It cannot always have been easy. What does it mean to be a single woman in India?
I just think, firstly, there's some things about being a single person, which are universal, irrespective of the gender or the country, which is you need to create self-love. You need to love yourself enough. You need to kind of value yourself, respect yourself, find yourself interesting enough to spend time with yourself. You need to be extremely disciplined, I think, because I've seen a lot of friends for whom being single is a phase, right? They're single for the weekend or they're single for a week. And the choices you make are very different. But when that this is your life, then you need to lead it a certain way. So I think those are some of the things that are universal about being single. And then there are some things which is what happens when you fall sick, the fact that the society looks at you as being a little more vulnerable, that men friends don't want to save your number under your name, the fact that women friends don't want to invite you on the weekends when they're with family. So there's a lot into being a single woman. And then there is the whole world of do's and don'ts about being a single woman in India, in Haryana, right? Which is one of the most patriarchal societies in the world, which is the whole judgmentalness of people. The fact that right from the security guard to your next door neighbor is looking at you suspiciously. So yeah, I think that being single, there is so much expectation that you start seeing yourself as a victim. And every small incident becomes a symbol of something larger. And I think somewhere in my head, I changed that about 7 years back. And that's led to a very positive attitude, both in my own reaction to the world and I think in turn the world's reaction to me. If I called a carpenter home to do some repair job and he came about 2 hours late, in my mind, I used to process it as because I'm a single woman and because I'm a woman who's asked him to come and he knows that there's no man in my house, he believes he can get away by taking me for granted. And when I changed that to believing that I'm not the victim, he's a poor guy who's working somewhere else and maybe his job didn't get over on time. Mm-hmm. And I started seeing him as the victim. I think everything for me has changed since that time. It's very easy for me now. I think everybody respects me for who I am and what I do. So I think the long and short of it is this, that it's not easy to be a single person anywhere in the world. You need to love yourself, but you also need to kind of change the mindset. I think it's more in our minds than in the world's mind. And if you become a giver, I think everything is easy.
I think it's also about, like you mentioned, about seeing yourself constantly as the victim and at the receiving end, rather than taking charge. In one of your articles I recently read, you mentioned that as a child, your idea of beauty was muddled. Across the world, and especially in India, we have a very narrow view of what beauty is and who is beautiful. It's changed slightly in the past year, a couple of years. But I think by and large, we have a sort of a very Western idea of what beauty looks like. This has been the blight for generations of Indian women. And now some women are speaking up about it, which is more power to them. But what are your thoughts about this?
Yeah, Sudha, I think I was an extremely complex and complicated child now that I look back and think about it. Because I was a North Indian who grew up in South and I was dusky complexion as I continue to be. There was a lot of finger pointing that happened. I used to dread the time that I used to go back to visit my relatives during my summer vacations because I constantly heard she's become like somebody who belongs to Madras, which essentially means that you're dark complexion. And there would be a lot of conversation with my mother to say, get her to eat this, get her to drink this. Why don't you take care of her? Why don't you do this? How will she get married? So being dark was something that was looked down upon. I constantly heard things like, this color will not go well on you. Red you can't wear, yellow you can't wear, this lipstick you can't wear. Every time I went for a wedding, I was made to dance on Jiski Biwi Kali Uska Bhi Bada Naam Hai. And I used to dread that. But at that time, I used to go and hide and run. And I remember I used to give my new clothes to my best friend to wear because I thought it would look better on her. So being dark complexion, dusky complexion was one thing. And then there was this whole thing of being a son, not being a son, being a boy, not being a boy, being a girl, not being a girl. So between these two, I really didn't know who I was and what I wanted to be and what is it that I wanted to project to the world. I think since then I've come a long way. I'm extremely comfortable with who I am. I wear all the colors that I want to. I wear all kinds of clothes. I feel very good about being who I am. So I believe that women are almost quadranted or boxed off as per the society's norms of what being beautiful is. And that's been true for so many cultures, right? So I guess it's the same thing that continues. And I think it's up to us to kind of feel good and then feel beautiful.
That is true. But advertising does play a huge role in sort of perpetuating a lot of the stereotypes.
Yeah. That's true. There can't be an excuse for this. Yeah. The first excuse that comes to my lips is that's what the market buys. But hey, there's an excuse.
Absolutely. So you reignited your passion for dance by setting up a school for dance. I remember the time when we were working together and you were working a full-time long day job. And on the side, you were trying to find time to do this and set it up. And it was and is a huge commitment in terms of time, investment, etc. What prompted you to embark on this journey?
I just think that there's never any one thing that leads to an action like this. I think lots of things in the universe come together, collude to kind of push you in a certain direction. In my case, when I look back at why this happened, there can be one or two triggers. But the space Marigold and dance occupies in my life is something that possibly words cannot capture. It's made me anchor my sense of femininity, beauty. It's given a stage, it's given a voice, it's given a language to who I really think I am. In fact, people say that I use my hands a lot more than most people, right? So they believe that I carry the aura of being a dancer in my corporate world as well. So specifically at that point of time in my life, I used to learn dance at somebody's house and for whatever reasons, she didn't want me to continue there. So there was reason for me to kind of start my own academy because dance I knew was going to continue to play an important role in my life. Dance itself had given me a lot of joy, a lot of confidence, a lot of beauty. And I wanted to spread that to other women. And that was the other reason why I wanted to start Marigold. So while all of this was happening, I just think through dance, I've connected to so many beautiful, wonderful, strong women from fields that I would have never interacted with earlier. I've created good karma because I get such lovely messages for being the medium through which people have fulfilled their childhood dreams of being on the stage, of continuing dance, of being cured out of their depression and grief, Also, I think professionally, the glass ceiling exists for women, no matter what we say.
Yeah.
And very frequently, our sense of identity starts getting fused with the designation on our visiting cards. And I know you've gone through a struggle with that for some time. And I think Marigold somewhere allowed me to create a cushion for myself. It allowed me to define myself in a way that wasn't just linked to my job. So in that sense, I'm really, really grateful for having found dance, or for dance having found me.
That's amazing, because I see all the posts on social media from your students and how grateful they are and how much they enjoy being a part of this group where they can express themselves and in their own time and do this. And you have enabled it. So it's brilliant. In response to the terrible tragedies during the pandemic, you along with some people set up Subha. What is Subha and what are you trying to do?
Yeah, thank you for bringing it up. It's something that we started on the 17th of May. I went through COVID all alone, right? And that was a vulnerable time for the entire world. And being alone kind of brings out various insecurities to the fore, right? So I first started by creating a volunteer group in my own condominium, where I got the RWA to invest in a few oxygenators, a few cylinders, and a few steroids, life-saving drugs, to say that, you know, we need to have this in our condominium. God forbid any of our own residents feel that. Because in my own head, I was just battling with this whole thing that, God forbid something happens to me, who do I reach out to? What will happen to me? So I think it came from self-defense, and it just opened up a world to me. We all saw the outpouring of humanity that happened. And so yeah. I was created essentially for women who've lost their husbands or partners to the pandemic. And we realized that, you know, this kind of grief is very, very unique, in the sense most of them were not able to bid goodbye to their partners. And this was all sudden. It happened in a period of 10 to 15 days. Most of them saw their husbands go to the hospital and then never come back. They were not there as a part of the last rites. They did not get to experience the grief and therefore live through the trauma. And there was a need for these women, and what they're going through, nobody else can go through. And there's nobody who can talk to them about it except for other women who are going through a similar grief. And therefore, Subha is our attempt at creating an ecosystem for women by doing multiple things. So we're an ecosystem, and we've got tie-ups with lots of coaches and counselors, and we train them in grief handling. Each brave heart, as we call them, because we don't like to use the word widow, each brave heart is assigned a buddy or a coach, depending on her life stage. We do a lot of career counseling. We've helped women restart their careers. We've got tie-up with some of the best people in Conferry who kind of train women how to create their LinkedIn profile, how to apply for jobs, how to prepare for interviews. We do a lot of financial advisory in terms of all the money that they're getting from their husband's PF account, gratuity, etc. How do they invest it to make sure that the kids' future is safe? We do a lot of taxation consultancy. We do a lot of legal consultancy. On this Saturday, we are doing a session with what is the emergency first aid you can give to children, because all of them are single parents now. So yeah, the attempt is to be able to create an ecosystem of volunteers and supporters who can help Bravehearts rebuild their lives.
And this is a very timely initiative. Do you have any numbers on people you have managed to help so far?
We've got 178 Bravehearts. We're a community of 320 people as of today. So that's 170 Bravehearts, and the rest of them are volunteers. So out of the 176, I think we've touched everybody's life in some way or the other. So there's a WhatsApp group, there's a Facebook group, they all connect with each other. They've now formed almost city-wide circles. And we've got people from US, Australia, Bihar, Assam, across the world. And they all find support within their own age group. We've got a Noida group now who meets offline once in a way. And they go to each other's children's birthday parties, etc. So I think somewhere Subha has brought in a ray of light, not just the 176 Bravehearts, but to the 300 odd people in the community.
That's an amazing thing. So we're at the last question. So tell me, who is Chandana, multifaceted as you are, and how important is your identity to you?
I think Chandana is evolving. Yeah, I think we're all work in progress. I don't think Chandana can be captured in one or two words or adjectives. I love being a woman, right? I love the feminine gender, and we're on the first Navratra, which celebrates the feminine energy. I absolutely revel in being who I am. I love myself. In that movie, Jab We Met, this woman says, "I'm my favorite person who I think."
Yeah.
In life. I also believe I'm a woman of action. I'm extremely resilient. I think life makes you resilient. I don't think any of us is born like that. But yeah, I think who I've become today is a strong, resilient, opinionated, khadoos woman. being who she is. I think I'm spoiled and I take great pride in it.
Brilliant. I love it. And I think more women need to be their own favorite person and stop looking for gratification outside from others. There is a last question, actually, another one. Who are the people who inspire you and what drives you every day?
I think self-made people inspire me. I think I'm complex about not having the pedigree that I would have wanted. I would have wanted to be a Harvard graduate, which I'm not. I believe that people who create themselves, people who kind of build themselves up from scratch, are people I respect and admire. And there's inspiration all around. I think all of us are mothers. I think the brave hearts that I interact with are phenomenal women, right? For me, two things that I respect in people are honesty and resilience and the ability to kind of be self-made, to not be phased down by what life throws at you. And I think an average woman inspires me. All women, I think, face so much and go through so many challenges that
Absolutely. I think there is so much inspiration around us every single day. And of course, the people who are around you, the broader network also. So thank you so much, Chandana, for taking time out from your busy, busy day to have this conversation. It was absolutely amazing. And I think a lot of the women can take away some learning from this conversation today. So really grateful. Thank you very much.
Not at all, Suna. Thank you so much. And
thank you for joining us this week on the Elephant in the Room podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to the show on any of your favorite platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts. And if you enjoyed listening to the podcast today, don't forget to write a review and tell your friends. Sign up on the link in the show notes to receive updates on our guest speakers, blogs, and events. And don't forget to tune in every Thursday for new episodes.